Please be advised that this interview contains some language which may not be appropriate for all audiences.
I like to say that regular show helped me survive grad school. It was a hyperfixation that brought me some joy in a time that was very stressful. I really related with the aimlessness that Mordecai and Rigby felt in being in their early to mid 20s. But yeah, this I was very annoying about this show.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest is a comic artist who worked on the officially licensed comic series with her story, The Mini Bikers of the Apocalypse, in the 2017 special. Please welcome Ellen Kramer.
Hi, that's me.
So, what got you initially interested in doing comics?
I think I was always interested in making comics. I remember I really loved Calvin and Hobbes, The Far Side, Garfield, and unfortunately Dilbert. We, for some reason, I had access to Dilbert comics. You know, it's can't win them all. But I think that was just kind of my family culture. We're all a bunch of complainers. But Calvin and Hobbes, Far Side, and Garfield were just what I had. And look, of course, Calvin and Hobbes, Far Side were just fantastic and still stand to this day as just really fantastic comics. That didn't really change as I got older because those were the only ones I had access to until about age 11, I think. I did encounter some comics in like Disney's Adventures magazine where I read a bit of Bone, but overall, it wasn't until I got really obsessed with Invader Zim that I discovered Jonan Vasquez's work. I must have been like 14 at the time. I was wannabe goth. I just adored Invader Zim. I thought it was really cute and fun and just really well made. And it introduced me to that this kind of kitschy style that he had in his comics. It was very tongue in cheek in a way that I felt was accessible to me. So I started copying that. And along the way, I found manga, which I was very happy to find. My library in my small town had one volume of manga, I think when I was around 11, and it was the volume of Ranma One Half, where it introduced the worst character, but I was just so enamored by, like, oh my god, there's girls and they're doing martial arts and it's funny and it's cute. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And I think around 14 was definitely when I started making comics on my own and realizing, damn, making comics is really hard. And I kept wanting to make comics. I kept wanting to get better at it, wanting to get faster at it. But it's still, to this day, I am almost 40. Comics are hard. They're an eclectic medium that require a lot of different skills that all come together into one media.
I mean, I think I remember when Regular Show was on, I made an attempt at making a few comics. Some of them I briefly remember, like there was one where Pops got shrunk down and put into like a candy jar. And I have no idea what it was about, but
it's good to work with simple figures. I think with any kind of medium, a mistake that younger artists make is wanting to do the, you know, make their magnum opus right out of the bat.
Well, what would you say that your creative process is like?
Kind of hard to say because I feel to this day I still struggle with it. I have ADHD. I've also kind of recently accepted I am on the autism spectrum. Might be obvious with my hyperfixations with, you know, Invader Zim, Regular Show, Sonic, what have you. It really, I just kind of play it by ear, but my process for making comics for, say, my webcomic that has, God, how many pages did it get to? Let me just check. 278. Okay, so it's a bit of a tangent. There is a teacher that I will sometimes present to his high school class. He's a literature teacher. He's real cool. He lets me present to the class about being a freelance artist. Well, I'm not a freelance artist anymore, but he still lets me present to the class because he respects comics as a medium. He'll maybe say graphic novel, but I'm sure he's the type to say, I don't give a shit if you call it a graphic novel. You can call it a comic, whatever. Stop trying to make this appeal to people who have contempt for the genre. He understands that. So I will present to his class. And I have this whole layout of like, okay, you first start with the thumbnail, then you do the overall kind of sketch, pencils, refine the lines, inks, flats, rendering, and then, do all the word balloons and stuff. I have learned a lot over time of just like time saving things, and you learn by doing, trial by fire.
So obviously, before you came to work on the Regular Show comic, you were a Regular Show fan. So how did you discover Regular Show?
At first I didn't like it. So around that time I had a job as a job coach, which is actually my job now. I worked with adults with disabilities to coach them on their job so they can be better at it, give them support that so they can be competitive in the workforce. The company I worked for wasn't great, but at that time, I think it was a little bit after I had quit that job. And so I see Mordecai and Rigby just pretending to be incompetent. Rigby is told to try the door, and he just touches it. He says it's locked. I'm like, don't just turn it, just turn it. I did have a client who was very, very much kind of like that, and so I see Rigby, and I'm like, I hate this little guy so much. And so I didn't want to, I just wasn't into it. I was more into Adventure Time. And so eventually I went back to watching it, maybe around season two or three or four, somewhere. And I got really into it. At that point, I was in grad school. I was going to be a school counselor, until I realized I can't be inside of a school building because that's just, it was traumatizing for me. I was trying to kind of face my demons in a way that was working against what I think was, I don't think I was meant for that, and that's okay. But I like to say that Regular Show helped me survive grad school. It was a hyperfixation that brought me some joy in a time that was very stressful. I really related with the aimlessness that Mordecai and Rigby felt in being in their early to mid 20s, feeling, even though I was like, oh, I'm going to grad school, I'm gonna be a school counselor, I'm gonna be the person that I needed when I was in school. A lot of people who decide to work in education were people who enjoyed school, and I've been told by many of my instructors and like master counselors and my internship were like, yeah, we need someone like you. And it's like, I'm sorry, I can't. I've been through the trenches. I don't want to go there again. But yeah, this I was very annoying about this show. And whenever I get very annoying about something, I have to make stuff. I don't only make comics, but I also make toys. And you probably, if you got, have gone through my blog, you've probably seen those.
I know that you did a custom Benson plush.
Yeah, I made a couple actually. I made one. I didn't like how it turned out. I made another. I still have it. I gave him the outfit he had in the Mad Rupert comic, Regular Show Skips. I thought that little hoodie and the bucket hat was adorable. To preface, Benson was my favorite character. I just love a sad, pathetic, but also like guy with a lot of heart, you know?
I'm gonna switch my camera back on because the plushies, I mean, they just couldn't have been worse than this.
Oh, the mass-produced ones, yeah. I've seen ones worse than that because they were understuffed.
Oh yeah, I mean, I know that like some of the merchandise that came like just after the show as well look absolutely nothing like the characters.
They were not meant to be rendered in 3D. They're kind of like The Simpsons. They're non Euclidean. Through some kind of miracle, Sonic the Hedgehog has been able to be translated to 3D, but it's taken a lot of effort and trial and error, I feel. but regular show characters are just they're flat circles, just like time.
Did you have any favorite episodes from regular show?
A lot of the Benson episodes. I love the one with the busted cart, where he has to drive to the dealership before the warranty expires. I really love that scene where he is just getting in his car, and there's a bit of a montage where he's like getting onto the highway, just getting ready for that trip. And any kind of episode where Benson bonds with Mordecai and Rigby, you get to see his humanity, I guess. He's not just a slave driving, grouchy, aging manager. He's a guy who really cares. Also, a lot of the Rigby and Eileen episodes, those are really good.
Were there any other regular show things that maybe you never shared?
I think I shared all of the stuff on my blog. I made like 40 pages of fan comics, which was what got Boom to like someone at Boom had like, oh, hey, this person's making a lot of regular show stuff. We'd ask them to make a comic. Yeah, anything that wasn't shared was probably just some sketches in my sketchbook, but most stuff I shared.
So you talk about you did a fan comic on your blog, and then that caught the attention of Boom. So how did that come about? How did you get kind of like the call, as it were, to work on the regular show comic?
I basically got an email from someone who was just like, "Hey, we saw your comics. You want to make a comic for with Boom?" And I said, "Yes." It's pretty much it. It's a little unceremonious, but I was excited. I was definitely excited because that was my first like official freelance for a thing that I was absolutely obsessed with. I learned, and this was something someone told me later, if there are any kind of stories you particularly want to tell, you give that story and the other recommendations. Or, okay, if they ask you to pitch three stories, you pitch a really good one and you pitch really shitty ones because they'll choose the good one over the shitty ones. But if you pitch something that is like something I really want to do, but I'm sure I'll pitch this one just in case they don't want. No, you don't do that. You pitch what you want to do, and you have them pick from. You actually have them pick from all the ones that you genuinely want to do. I gave them the option of one that was like a little more safe, if you know what I mean. That's on brand, and they picked that one. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll do that one because the original story I wanted to do was something a little more heart, where Benson is making uniforms for the employees and he's, doing tailoring for Skips. And he's complaining about Mordecai and Rigby. And, Skips says some sage advice and basically it's just like, they're not as bad as, you're complaining about. You really do care about them. They have this kind of heart to heart. Benson just begrudgingly accepts it. And he goes, okay, Skips, you're done. Skips just flexes and the shirt just turns to shreds and he skips off. Oh, I just remembered the other one is Rigby gets addicted to an otome game, like a dating sim. He's at Eileen's and he sees this game and Eileen's a little embarrassed because, it's not cool to play dating sims, which the only people who will tell you that are, boring people. And but, Rigby's kind of a boring normie, if you know what I mean. So he sees the game, he starts playing it because Eileen is just like, oh, that's just it's I don't know if you'd like it. He starts playing it because it's a video game. And the comic ends with, fast forward, Eileen is trying to sleep and she's telling Rigby to go away, go home, and he's still playing the game and he's like, how do I get so-and-so senpai to like me?
And the one that actually came along was a question I have actually, and I'm just going to check. I've got a copy of the comic here. The comic seems to have two names, in that within the comic itself, it's called A Mini Bike Built for Two. But on the front page, it's referred to as the Mini Bikers of the Apocalypse.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember if that was a mistake on my end or them deciding to like brand it differently. Yeah, I was not aware of that.
I think it's a great comic. You can definitely tell that it's written by somebody who understands the show. Like, one thing that I notice is that Muscle Man refers to Starla as Fun Bun, which comes directly from the show.
I watched that show multiple times, just going through there. Oh yeah, it does say Mini Boxers of the Apocalypse. Not sure what happened there, but sometimes it's a little hard to look at it just because I feel like my colors and my composition, and I mean I'm going to be my own worst critic. But when I was making this, I actually got a note from the editor to say, okay, so Starla and Muscle Man can't punch these kids. That we don't want them punching kids. Like, oh, okay. So we had them do a bunch of like high effort wheelies and just defeat them through the power of love.
Definitely would have been a very different story, though, I think, if it ended with them beating up children.
Oh yeah. I really enjoyed drawing these characters, and you know, when I wrote Fanny, Warren, Penny, and Dean, maybe I didn't have faith in the audience, but I wrote their like actual roles underneath. I was really into Bravely Default at the time. I don't know if you've ever played, but you can see the four main characters in one of the panels. Page three in the second panel, you'll see a guy with a pompadour, a blonde girl with a bow, a guy with a white shirt and gray hair, and a girl with kind of black hair with her bangs to the side. Those are the four warriors of light in the Bravely Default, the first one. Well, I guess technically the second one, but that one was kind of bad. I also put in a Full Metal Alchemist reference with the summoning circle.
And I mean, at some point, I think those characters might end up getting their own page on the wiki.
Oh,
Not
that's fun.
individually, but like as a
Oh,
group.
yeah. No, I figured. No, they're not. It's a regular show wiki, not Bravely Default wiki. What Boom did with, I'm sure they still do, with whatever license that they have, they mostly work in licenses for stuff for younger, you know, kids, teens. And so there's a lot of 20-somethings who are still. It isn't to say that you can't enjoy cartoons when you're older. It's just that there's a higher percentage of 20-year-olds into a cartoon than there would be, like I say, a 60-year-old. And these are people who are young, inexperienced, who get approached by a company, a publisher, an official publisher, and they're like, "Hey, we want to hire you for this work." I'm like, wow, I'm making a thing I'm passionate about. I'm getting paid for it. Crazy. Yeah, I got like $80 a page, and I did all the writing every step of the way. They said someone could do the speech balloons, which I probably should have allowed them to do, but I was like, no, I can do all of that. I'm going to be a control freak over this. $80 a page, fully colored, written, penciled, inked, colored, lettered, all of that. $80. That's peanuts.
Wow.
Trickle down economics. Is it working yet, Reagan?
So another published comic which you've worked on is It's Your Funeral.
Yes.
So how did that come about, and what was the experience like compared to regular show?
It's actually very funny. So my web comic is called Parisa. There is a character named she hasn't really shown up, but she's okay, well, Ace Attorney, you know, Phoenix Wright, there's a TV show character named the Steel Samurai, and I loved how a lot of the characters were fans of it, even though some were adults and were like, what, no, that's for kids. So I wanted a character like that, so I made a character named Blue Valkyrie. So the main character, Nolan, loves Blue Valkyrie. It's a huge motivation for him to be like the shonen hero that he wants to be. The writer of It's Your Funeral, her comic was actually called Blue Valkyrie. She reached out. She said, "Hey, that's kind of crazy, the weird coincidence." And we got started talking, and she put in a lot of work to pitch it to publishers to make a series of floppies. Personally, I'm not crazy about that kind of format. It comes with its pros and cons. I like to buy trades when I do buy comics. I recommended reaching out to Iron Circus. There's problems with Iron Circus too, I think with any publisher. But It's better than Boom. So we had like a little pilot comic. When we got picked up, we got the contract. So we worked on that. I worked on that comic for a year. I gave myself an RSI. I learned that I am drawing way too much with my wrist rather than my shoulder or elbow. But it was, I was so, I loved working on that. I loved just, my day was just making comics and I was having a great time. I got to work kind of fast and loose with my process because ADHD, we're highly, our attention is interest-based. So if something is boring, it's practically impossible to do at times. It takes so much effort to brute force that. So what I would do is, oh, one day I'll do a bunch of thumbnails. Next day, or maybe later in the day, I'll go do this stage of work. I would just kind of have this like these progress bars that fill up over time. Make sure I have the thumbnails first, and then sketch out some pages. Just make sure I have the foundation, and then just kind of work on and off on certain things. I found a tool someone made that was a comic production calculator that would break down the timeline. So like you need to get this done by this time. And that was probably the most I had ever felt like I was creating a schedule for myself. One of the reasons why freelance was so hard was I needed the structure, but I also hated the structure.
I completely hear you on that, especially with ADHD.
Yeah, it's you can just be an absolute genius at something, but then once something's boring, it's like I don't know how to do this.
Is there anything kind of from your own life that you have put into your comics? And this doesn't just have to apply to regular show, this can apply to anything that you've done.
Mostly, I put a lot of myself and my characters from my webcomic. I take bits and pieces of myself from various points in my life. Nolan, I think, is that kind of. I make this joke. It's like I don't want to be a conventionally attractive tall woman. I want to be a scrappy little furry character, who's like a shonen protagonist who does platforming in video games. I want to be a little kid with a scrappy animal sidekick, like a magical girl or something. I'm nearly 40, and every now and then I'm just like, yeah, that'd be pretty fucking cool. But I put a lot of myself in Gwen, the other main character of Parisa. She is so I try to emphasize this because people have caught on that she is trans, and but they have assumed that she's trans masculine. She's not. And her being trans is not her story. That was just kind of a thing I put in there because I'm like, why not? But I also related to a lot of trans girls that I knew over the years who I felt like I couldn't express femininity properly, and I rejected it for a time in my life. Not in a way that I felt deep down I was trans masculine. I know that I'm not. It's more I saw a lot of common ground in these women who hit their adolescence a lot later, and being on the autism spectrum, that kind of doubles down on it. Gwen's story is opening up to people without the need for this defensive sarcasm that she has, for this gruffness that she carries, because she feels like she's being put in a box and she doesn't like it. Her guardian, Dalal, kind of tries to encourage her to like, well, okay, you're a girl. Well, then let's get you some girl clothes. Because the reason her being trans is not a big deal is because it's not a big deal in that world. It's not like we're not going to go down the path of the tragic trans story. That like that French movie set in Mexico, Amelia something. It's bad. It's so bad. And I have other characters. Some haven't been introduced yet. I have Svetlana, who is just like the epitome of a rotten woman. She is awful. And sometimes you want to write a character that's just gives you carte blanche to be a piece of crap, and she's a piece of crap, and I love her for it. I love women who suck. I have Jonathan, who is the more analytical part of me, who's the part that's just like, I don't really get this whole spirit business, which. Spirit magic is a thing in that story. He's like, I really like science. I'm an artist, but I love science. I love the overlap of science and art, but I love them in isolation too. It's kind of a love for the world, if you could put it that way. And that's what I also put in the comic, was just a love for this natural world. I don't know. I don't think any hardcore Parisa fans, if there are any left, because I haven't been updating, ever listened to this. But yeah, the world's going to get chewed up a bit. You're going to experience that sorrow that I feel when I see the world burning as it is. I mean, I like bittersweet endings. I don't like just straight up bad endings. I don't want to have the comic end like that. But also, when we go through life, we get knocked around a bit. We get scars, but we can still carry on from those scars. We can still, there's still tomorrow,
I was kind of hoping to have read all of Parisa before interviewing you.
That's a lot of works to go through.
I just haven't really had the time to get through all of it, but I read the first two chapters and I was like, really want to read chapter three, but I also like really have to properly prepare for the interview and do other things as well. But no, I can't wait to read the rest of it.
Thank you. Yeah, the I've noticed the chapters have gotten longer as time has gone on. But it's stuff that I have learned. Trial by fire. I want to redo the first chapter, not which is a common trap that a lot of web comic artists fall into. But I feel like the comic would flow better if the comic started out differently narratively, but also visually, just because it's the comic's a bit hard to read. Not that it's I'm saying it's bad, but it has a readability issue. I have now understood that my use of color, it can be seen as vibrant, but the problem is that it has contrast issues. And that's a thing I want to work on when I get back to it, which is a thing I really would like to do. I'd like to tell this little story, but I'd like to also approach it in a more thoughtful way that's more well planned out, instead of just like, I'd like to, the characters go here next. I'd like them to go here next, which still sort of the process, but at the same time, like, okay, we but really need to focus on the beginning, middle, and end, which are the big, there's these big events that are going to happen, and then we're going to have these stories in between, usually, hopefully, something bittersweet,
So you do have an end in plan for that.
Oh yeah. I mean, more or less. If you've played any JRPGs or cute mascot platformers, you might get an idea of where this kind of stuff ends up. I kind of want to be something that's a little faithful to that, but also kind of turns that on its head a little bit. But I really want the focus just to be on every character's journey and how many people just lie to themselves in the day to day,
We'll move back onto regular show briefly.
Yes.
Of course, I don't know if you're aware that there is a new regular show series coming out.
I'm aware. I feel like I've kind of moved on, but I also am just not crazy about all of these remakes and revivals. You can understand why.
Well, essentially, with that, there have been a lot of people speculating whether or not this could mean that there are going to be more comics in the future. Would that be something that you'd be interested in getting involved with, or?
Probably not. My day job keeps me pretty busy. I've been kind of focusing more on, it's spring and I just ordered a giant pile of Tagro, a fertilizer or a potting mix that comes from the water treatment plant. So, like today, I was just moving around until my phone told me, hey, you got an interview in half an hour. I was like, oh, geez. gardening. I've really been getting to gardening. Our landlord's real cool. She's just like, you can do whatever you want with the yard. Go to town. So we always bring our harvest. I focus on tomatoes. My roommate focuses on literally everything else. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy 14. That's been my kind of hyperfixation. I feel like these kinds of things are what helped me get through hard times. Regular show got me through grad school, and Final Fantasy 14 helped me get through the pandemic. I think it's really good to have hyperfixations, especially if you're like on the spectrum of ADHD. It's just one of those things you can look back on and just kind of giggle and You know, that for that for regular show it was Benson. I always just I loved drawing him. He was just a fun character to draw. He was so well designed. Like the gumballs were his 5 o'clock shadow. That's so clever.
So what would you say are your main inspirations from maybe other pop culture or just from your own life?
I love late 90s, early aughts video games. I was a pretty lonely kid, but I would spend a lot of time just playing emulated Super Nintendo games on this crappy old PC with like Windows ME. So I would just play a backlog of games, like fan translated games I never would have been able to play. Mostly RPGs, just because it was very hard to do platforming on a keyboard. You know, at that around that age, late 90s, early aughts, that's when anime was really starting to flow into the States, and that wasn't just, you know, getting a crappy VHS rip where the credits are cursing Miami Mike. Yeah, you know about Miami Mike, huh? So I think that was around the time Tokyopop started licensing just a ton of manga. So the Barnes and Noble started to get a manga section. And I was ecstatic. I was just like, oh my God, this is just more accessible. I can't afford any of this because my allowance, but I could go to Barnes and Noble and sit and read manga. There's manga in the library now. This is great.
Do you have any advice for anyone who would like to work professionally as a comic writer or a comic artist?
Value your time, make what you love. Do not try to follow what you think will lead to success. Just make what you love, you'll get good at it, you'll get noticed. Or not, you know, that's another possibility. And that's okay. You know, make sure to have a if you want to do art full time, make sure to have a contingency plan. It's becoming more and more hostile for independent artists out there, especially with the rise of, okay, I want to say you can't say rise of AI anymore. It's falling, but that makes no difference to the companies that had bought into it and are stuck holding the bag and are determined to make up for their stupid mistake of buying into the snake oil. So they're like, look, we can still salvage this. We can still be successful by promising the world with AI, it with a technology I don't understand, not even the people who are making the models fully understand. It's really hard out there, and it really sucks. So I would recommend having some sort of contingency plan. Some people have recommend, yeah, you could just live with your parents, which is less of a stigma than it used to be. But it's hard. Try your best. Figure out how to market yourself, because you can't just rely on, I'm just going to make what I love and eventually I'll get noticed. I'm like, well, that's just the passive thing you have to do. The more active thing is you need to go find an agent, go find open calls for something, go look for a creator scholarship, you know, if you're really serious about that. But overall, on a more personal side, yeah, just make what you love.
Great advice.
And I will say this, AI models can have their place in research if they are properly trained for that specific purpose. I want to reiterate again, I love science. I believe in science. And with testing and retesting and large sample sizes, that is a very time-consuming, expensive process. And if you know how to use it, that is scientifically sound, I guess. It's not something that, you know, that's why we have peer review and all of that. Any tool can be used for good or bad. Currently, we're only seeing it used for bad by people who don't care about art and just want to make money by selling snake oil. People talk about how hard it is for them to come up with their prompts. I'm like, really? Is it that hard to write something? Because you sure are writing a lot about how your writing should be respected when it's not even like you're just throwing in prompts. Like, if it's that hard to write, why are you sending me these long diatribes about how I should respect you for not respecting the artistic process? I hate the word normie. I really do. but sometimes it can be useful in a certain context to describe people who are just not interested in, say, something that you have a hyperfixation for, that you are very passionate about. They don't really care about that. They only care about results. And what they want is to kind of dip their toes. I feel like not so much a product of the way social media has kind of delivered things to us, but that hasn't helped.
So we are coming towards the end of the interview now, but before we go, I'd like to ask, is there anything that you'd like to promote that you've been working on or might be coming up?
Just my webcomic, Parisa. The current stuff that I'm working on is more personal stuff that I don't think anyone outside of the Final Fantasy XIV fandom would like. It's not something I want to put in the spotlight. It's for me. Being online since I was like 11 from the early aughts, the late 90s, I always wanted to reach out to people and get a lot of attention for the things that I felt I was good at. And that made me insufferable at times. And as I got older, I was like, oh my God, I don't need this. I really don't need this people focusing on me. It's granted the internet is different now than it was back then. It's bad. Yeah, just read my webcomic if you like video game furries, JRPGs, Klonoa, Sonic, Digimon. That's kind of where and Final Fantasy is where the vibe is. Be kind to each other. Don't waste your time with trolls. If you feel the need to yell at someone, ask yourself, is me yelling at them for their sake or for mine? Try to be chill, you know?
And where might people be able to find you on social media?
Just my webcomic, parisacomic.com. It's on Hiveworks. It hasn't updated in a while, but I have a page I need to upload and pages I want to continue to work on. Hiveworks has a lot of fun stuff. If you like cute queer comics by creators who are kind of in a similar cohort as mine, you should definitely check out the regular show wiki. Sounds like a lot of love has been put into it.
Unless you're already listening on the wiki.
Yeah. Yeah. Advertising the wiki on the wiki.
But yeah, Ellen, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you once again to Ellen Kramer for joining us for this interview, and also for providing us with the amazing artwork used in the video edition on YouTube. Once again, if you're interested in reading Ellen's webcomic, then visit parisacomic.com. A link will be in the description. Next time, we will be speaking with Jake Black, a writer who contributed to Regular Show Books. Here's a preview.
There was a whole Reddit thread about how I sucked as a writer because of that book. And I actually screenshotted a line where they were like, "Beware Jake Black." And that was like my cover photo on Facebook for a while, where I was just like, "Oh, come on, man. I didn't intentionally write a crappy book."